When a government can confiscate the earnings of the people with no restraint or no limit whatsoever on the amount that government takes, then government has become the master.
Didn't you say that all services were worth at least $5.15, and here there is a service that's being rendered to you personally, which you are not compensating at all?
No, I said to you earlier, unless someone decides that they want to volunteer.
During the election, all this enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders was taking place while people in Venezuela, under a socialist government, were starving. They were breaking into grocery stores desperate to get food.
Regulations.
Some regulations.
Regulation.
What do you think should be the proper income tax rate?
Well, the best would be zero.
Welcome back to another episode of Law and Profits here on the Fight Laugh Feast Network. I'm King Ginger, and the mercy of the wicked is cruel. I am inside of the Cross Politics studio today.
The heart of the beast.
The heart of the beast. The heart of the Fight Laugh Feast.
I don't know who to welcome. Do we welcome you, or do you welcome us? I don't know how that works.
So meta.
Well, you know, it's whatever works.
Okay. Well, welcome, Marcus.
Well, thank you. Well, welcome on my show. Yeah. Finally.
This is the first
time. Finally. I've been trying to get you on my show for a long time.
Yeah.
He's gotten how to build a tent on.
He keeps finding better people.
Yeah.
He's finding better people.
Shoot.
Well, I was here in Moscow, Idaho with my wife, and we were watching the Grace Agenda conference. That
Fantastic.
Was amazing, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
Fantastic. And one of the things that I think when you come to Moscow, Idaho, to view Christchurch and what they're doing, the thing that really hits you really hard is the fact that there's so many builders here. There's so many business owners.
Pioneers.
Yeah. You know, people, you know, we ask people, what do you do? It's always, most of the time, I run a company, or I'm doing this, or I'm building something incredible. And I think a lot of that is just the lack of opportunity here by itself.
Just because
it's
something.
A small town.
Yeah, you have to make up your
own
path.
You have to find your own work, and you have to build your own thing. But also, I think the worldview that Doug has created has really led to that as well.
Yeah.
And so that's been incredible. But anyway, at the conference, Gary DeMar, Uncle Gary, he suggested really underhandedly, like it wasn't a big deal.
Give it to him to undersell it.
Yeah,
right?
He undersold it. He's like, yeah, make sure you watch this documentary called General Magic. It's about, you know, technology and, you know, the need for infrastructure when you build technology. And I was like, okay. And then I went over to your house Sunday afternoon, and we watched that movie, and it rocked our world.
Yeah, it did.
It rocked our world. Now, you haven't seen it yet.
No.
Okay. So, it rocked our world. So, essentially, the premise of this show is Steve Jobs was fired from Apple in the 90s.
That's amazing.
It was one of the biggest corporate mistakes of all time. It'll go down as one of the biggest
the dumbest thing.
And then so when he was fired, a bunch of people left Apple, and they're like, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And so they left and decided to take what Steve Jobs instilled in them and start a company called General Magic. And at General Magic, their goal was to, now this might not seem like a big deal, but I have to emphasize this. Before there was internet, before the internet was invented, they were working on the smartphone. They were working on an all-in-one portable PC that you could communicate, you could send email, all this.
What year did they start?
In 1991.
Okay, 1991.
So this is before what mainstream internet adoption.
This is when Text Instruments, Pong, was just getting hot. You remember that?
It was before that.
Yeah. So this is
Atari was coming on.
That was in the 70s, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, there was like round two in the 80s that I remember, at least.
Yeah, this is like NES.
There's kind of
NES, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So
Game has his years.
Sega Genesis.
Nobody was playing.
I got to remind you guys that I'm your senior. I was born in 1979.
Right.
But Pong was like the game we were putting down to pick up Nintendo.
I know. I'm just saying it was
well,
hot.
Well, no,
you know?
But for me, Pong was the hand-me-down that I got from the family people.
That's
that
like
got
I said.
The new one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So they're forming this company, and they're trying to build essentially the iPhone. before there was internet. They were talking about the cloud and how data is going to be stored in the cloud and sent down, and they made a deal with AT&T, and you're watching this and they're looking at all these things they're looking to integrate that don't even exist yet. Yeah, right. This is and then over the course of them building this thing, a few interns were like, "Hey, is this going to connect to the World Wide Web?" And they're like, "World Wide Web? What's that?" Essentially, because they were building this own thing with AT&T, and they couldn't actually. It was funny because they couldn't actually switch to the internet because they made a multi-million-dollar deal with AT&T to provide the infrastructure.
Mm.
So, and then of course the internet obviously was much better free infrastructure.
Because Al Gore knew what he's doing.
They were just ahead of it. So I'll stop there because we'll get to the end.
Yeah.
But that's just the basic premise is you have these guys who are planning the smartphone before there was any possibility of that even happening.
And can I just add to that? It wasn't just a smartphone. It was the world that the smartphone lived in too.
Right.
Right. It was transcended. The smartphone was portable.
Because they were creating the email system. Yeah, they were creating the apps. They
emojis.
Were
we think we see
did
emojis.
They call them emojis.
Animated emojis.
Animated emojis.
No, they were animated emojis. And I was just like, wait, didn't Apple just come up with that?
Right. No. No, they didn't. Yeah. They were, and their goal, when they first started, I got to say, if I want to talk about this and you guys want to see the film, you're probably going to have to turn this off now because I'm going to give all kinds of spoilers.
Yeah.
But right. One of the things they show when they first showed their first models for the circuit board was they showed a lady talking. And she's like, hopefully it's as small as your wristwatch one day.
Yeah. Yeah. With like
it 1991?
Was like, yeah. Film with like actual film.
Wow.
Right? Like
I haven't seen it yet. So this is unbelievable.
Camera. Uh-huh. She's like, yeah, I hope it's like, you know, maybe it'll fit in your watch one day.
Oh, while the dude is carrying a camera the size of Spain.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. It's incredible.
The cameraman is thinking, can we get something smaller? Maybe I can fit in my pocket to film this one.
Well, and I think Knox, yeah.
You know?
Can you get that on the phone? Can you get a camera on the phone? Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Knox, you pointed this out. I haven't seen the documentary yet, but you guys, we've talked about it a lot since Uncle Gary brought it up. But one of the things that you pointed out, it's kind of like, you know, when Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, yeah. There was nothing there. He invented right. this light bulb. Well, how do you roll that technology out to all the houses?
Right.
There's no grid or anything.
Hey, look, this light bulb's going to be great, but you got to tear down your walls. You got to upheave your streets.
Yeah.
Install the power wire. Like, there's no infrastructure there.
Yeah. How does grandma get that light bulb?
There's nothing to carry the technology.
It's a great product, but how can I buy it?
And same with the telegraph, right? When telegraph, Morse code, Samuel Morse, great Calvinist Christian who started the telegraph.
And you got to tell the story why he started it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This should have been in this documentary, actually. But really so essentially what happened was Samuel Morse was a painter, and he was off doing painting for business. And his wife got sick and fell ill. And he received a letter that said, your wife is sick. She's fallen ill. Don't come back. Continue your work. Because by the time you get this letter, she'll be dead and the funeral would have already happened.
Yeah.
And so he was haunted with this idea of how slow communication was.
He actually got back and his wife was buried.
That's right. Yep. So he missed the funeral and everything. And it just haunted him. And one day he's sitting in a bar with some friends and they're talking about some experiments with lightning. And they mentioned just offhand, they mentioned that, well, the lightning can travel through the copper wire no matter how much wire it is. It arrives around the same time, so it's super fast. So I guess they did a test on like a mile of wire or whatever and arrived at the same time. And instantly he said, but could you communicate with that?
Right.
And so that's when he went and he developed the telegraph. And The funny thing is, I mean, think about what the telegraph requires. Telegraph requires power lines everywhere, the infrastructure to make that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he presented it to Congress. The first telegraph was public presentation of the telegraph. He tweeted. he coded the word, "What hath God wrought?" What blessings has God brought us? Yeah. That was the first thing. And Congress was just essentially like, I think he was asking Congress for like maybe like $200,000, which is a lot of money at the time. But all luckily, fortunately, all the people in Congress were fiscal conservatives, and they're like, we're not going to waste taxpayer money on this. And so,
gratefully,
thankfully, yeah. And so all these companies came, and he licensed it to all these companies, Bell, AT&T, essentially. Right. And that's how they built the infrastructure for Morse code all across the country. It was right. private industry. Right. And so, again, so he had the technology but didn't have the infrastructure to be able to implement that.
To deliver.
And then you get into the whole problem of, well, how do I send a telegraph overseas? And you had another Christian solve that problem. But that's completely another story. But yeah, so the, you know, the underground wire that they had to build across transatlantic cable, which we still use today, by the way, to carry fiber optics. That's same right. technology that was invented to
the same underground.
Yep. Yeah. So
that's right.
The thing that I, you know, we're talking about infrastructure, and so it was Uncle Gary who actually brought up the fact that Thomas Edison creating the light bulb. He creates this light bulb and he shows a demo of it, and boom, there's light, and everybody's like, cool, that's awesome. He's like, no, you need this in your house, right?
Right.
Like, that's great, but I don't have anything in my house that's going to power this.
Right.
And he had to go back and create a power grid and infrastructure, which he did,
yeah.
to get power just to the light bulb. And like you were talking about tearing down your walls.
There was that's a big battle that happened too with Tesla and Edison, right? That was a huge thing. And Tesla's was better.
Right.
But Edison won the market.
Yeah.
And so even now, like we talk about wireless tech, Tesla had that.
Wireless tech has been around since that whole
be
problem.
Able to power your device wirelessly. But the way Tesla had that. Go ahead. Yeah, but Edison won.
Yeah.
And all that was, I think, I don't know all the details, but a lot of that was like a lot of crony capitalism stuff that was happening in the back end. But ultimately, Edison won out, and that resulted in Edison just disappearing and being seen as like some crazy kook. And we got our infrastructure, which are, what is it in the wall? Is DC in the wall? But AC would have been way better or something like that is what I hear. So Tesla's was AC.
The reason infrastructure is important is because, and here goes spoiler alert, the reason that they failed at General Magic was because they didn't have infrastructure for what they were doing.
That's right.
Why was AT&T not that infrastructure?
Well, because, so when they got done, they rolled everything out. And I mean infrastructure. I mean a prepped crop and ground that's ready for the product that you are bringing, and it blends together with their world seamlessly, so that they don't have to go and adapt a new process to do things.
Right.
And so I don't just mean infrastructure as in they needed the internet or they need no. They needed to understand their clients. That they have a mental infrastructure as well.
Right.
In order to be able to adapt to a new product.
You're trying to explain what email is to people that don't know what email is.
Well, right now, we can think retrospectively and say, oh, that's cool how it started. It's like, but think, you would have never adapted to it because you didn't know. So think about with Edison. Edison, why do I need a light bulb? Do you know how easy it is to light a match and to start?
Right.
People are already using lights.
Right.
That's right.
People were not emailing each other.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So by when they rolled out the General Magic, rolled out its new portable machine, no one felt like they needed it. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a world for them to be like, I need that. You know? And so their infrastructure wasn't there. They didn't think about it in a way that prepped the people and could bring them along the journey to say, you know, they started at the end instead of saying, how do we introduce this so that people have something in between this device and, you know, where they currently are.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they didn't build a world for what they made to live in.
Right. And so it was released to the public. It cost $800. The device, what was it called? Sony Live Magic?
Live Link or something like that.
It was basically some sort of handheld phone.
It was a handheld computer.
Like a tablet.
Yeah, it was essentially a handheld tablet. Okay. Yeah, it was $800. This was in 95 or 6.
That's pretty expensive.
Yeah, $800 back then was a lot. Yep. And nobody bought
3,000 people roughly bought it. And all the 3,000 people who bought it were friends or family of the people who made it.
Yeah, who knew the vision.
Who knew the vision.
That's right. And so what happened is they filed bankruptcy. General Magic filed bankruptcy. And then everybody went their own way. And that's where the magic of this documentary comes
really
from.
Takes place.
Is when you see the intern... I want to explain this to you. For those that aren't going to watch it, but this is a spoiler, a major spoiler. There's a guy in there, and he starts out, and he's just this nerdy little dude that's just knocking on the door, calling every day. He knows something special is happening there. He's calling, can I get a job? Can I get a job? Can I just fill coffee? What can I do to get in there? And he gets in there, and then General Magic goes bankrupt. And this is the guy that is the co-creator with Steve Jobs on the iPod and the iPhone.
Oh, wow.
And 15 feet away from him in the same building is a guy that started Android. Wow. 90% of all the world's smartphones came from this one company.
From this one failure.
From this one seeming that's the thesis of the documentary, right?
Right.
Was General Magic a failure?
Right.
And so...
And not just that, but everybody that was in that room in one way or another has been affecting
our lives. The CTO of Twitter.
That's right.
Everybody in there. I mean, you just can't think of in terms of just, I remember watching, I was selling cell phones during, I had a job where I sold cell phones when Steve Jobs pitched the iPhone. And everybody was talking about it at work. And I was like, I'm not going to watch it till I got home. I got home and I watched it and I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
Like this is
going to explode.
This is something that looking back, that feeling is, oh, well, that's the invention of the printing press.
Wow.
Like you can go back and watch it now and you go, oh, that'd be like Gutenberg saying, here's the printing press. Right. Yeah.
You know, what's funny is I remember was it 1998, 99, the push for cell phones to go from analog to digital signals.
Right.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I remember it became a big thing. And I had my first cell phone, I think in 98, it was my first cell phone. And it was analog. But it didn't have the capacity to go digital.
Right.
And so they're all going digital, you know, better technology, better sound, better, not as much wear and tear. Yeah. Right.
So I was selling phones. I was working at Radio Shack in high school during that time.
Wow. Yeah.
What's a Radio Shack?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the things too that they opened up about this is at the time that this is happening, so 17 years of failures for the guy, the college student that you were talking about that just wanted to get in the door, who was banging in to sell coffee or whatever, mm-hmm. 17 years. And when he gets the call, Jobs doesn't start with the iPhone or the iPad or anything else. He starts with an MP3 player.
That's right. So they fixed the problem that they had, right? The problem was it was all in one and nobody knew that they needed it.
But no, yeah.
And so Steve Jobs comes in and says, well, let's just give them music right now.
But notice what had happened though. What had happened? We had just exploded. And I remember this we went from cassettes to CDs. That was pretty quick. And then all of a sudden from CDs to digital. MP3 players right away.
Digital.
Yeah.
And as soon as MP3 players came out, they went everywhere. So all of a sudden you have market saturation with music everywhere now that you can move to a portable device.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve calls this guy and says, it's a great concept, but it's clunky.
Yeah. Right?
You got to put this drive in there and only hold so much music. Yeah. He's like, what if we could just, I think what you guys were doing at General Magic was the right thing. Mm-hmm. How can we take and make this more intuitive?
Right.
And so
they didn't start with all the bells and whistles, email systems,
and
all
so,
that stuff.
So they mentioned started that. With just so, music. So they've had the first iPod.
Yeah.
Then they had an iPod you could play solitaire on.
Yeah.
Then you had an iPod.
They started adding
apps on the iPod. So you remember the later generation iPods, you could do a little bit more than play music.
Yeah.
You could play video on them.
Then uh-huh. you can get on the internet with them.
And then the next thing you know,
yeah.
Steve Jobs is standing up there and he says, today we're introducing an iPhone, uh-huh. a web device, a cell phone,
yeah.
an iPhone. Machine. Oh, and he just repeats it over, an iPhone, a mobile device, a cell phone. And then people start applauding, and then that graphic merges into the iPhone. And it finally came together. General Magic came together at that moment, right. and everything they were working on. And people were like, oh, yeah, I don't need three devices anymore in my pocket.
You know, this is what a good leader does, is he's already 10 steps ahead of everybody.
That's right.
But he knows the message that these people need right here and now.
Right.
And so Steve Jobs was 10 years ahead when he released the iPhone.
He was
10, 20 years ahead. But I love how you just talked about how he repeated iPhone,
iPhone, cell internet phone, communicators.
Internet, you know, yeah. He's repeating something, but he's already, you know what? He already developed, you know, the next app, you know,
right.
for, you know, he's already developing the music app, the you know, well, the home, about, the home system that you have on your app.
Think
now,
about that first stuff. iPhone. Yeah. It was one screen, right?
And you look one
at that
button.
But you look at that one screen and you go, there's blank spaces on the home screen. Yeah. Why are there blank spaces? Why didn't they fill it out? Mm-hmm. Why wasn't it like just symmetrical? It was like maybe
Steve had it filled out on his phone. you know,
that's right. So he knew the App Store was coming.
Yeah, right.
He knew that. He's like, this is the next step.
Well, they had already designed the App Store inside of General Magic.
Right. That's right.
General Magic had an App Store.
Yes, bro. They absolutely.
Had, 1991. Yes.
Bro, here's the deal. This is what's so crazy about infrastructure because infrastructure really matters because they had everything that we already are currently using and think it's just cool and new. They already had it thought of. They had everything there. And then when they presented it, people were like, I don't know why I need this.
Right.
Right. Right.
And so the next 17 years was nothing but cultural infrastructure being built in such a way that when he got ready to introduce the iPhone, people already knew what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
They already knew they needed it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the infrastructure was there. But he worked the process through an MP3 player. Even though the infrastructure was closer, he's like, it's not time yet.
He's like, people already listen to music. They're already listening to music on CDs. Well, let's get them to listen to music on this device.
Right.
Let's lead them this way. I think might sound a little self-promotional, but one of the conversations that we've had so much on about our Fight Laugh Feast network and what we're trying to do is we're trying to build our own infrastructure. You know, we're trying
That's a problem with all of Christianity. This is where I wanted to go with this.
Okay.
Is that we always look at, we're so committed to Facebook.
Yeah.
We're so committed to YouTube. We're so committed to Twitch or whatever our social media platform is. Uh-huh. And we're thinking, well, all we need to do is just build another app. Mm-hmm. Well, no, you don't need to build another app. Mm-hmm. You need to build what's after the internet. Mm-hmm. And you have to think, okay, what in 20 or 30 years are my kids is going to make my kids, laugh at the internet. When I tell my kids about the internet, they're going to be like, "Honey, you guys, you had that? Like that, what is that? And how do we get there?" And instead of Christians focusing on another, just, you know, let's just make a Parler. Well, we made Parler. We made Minds. We made all these other social media accounts.
We're making bad hacks of even those.
But the,
you know?
But yeah, but the problem is the infrastructure, right. Like Facebook. Yeah. Facebook is your login for other websites.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Facebook is your Oculus Rift login to play your video game.
That's right.
Like Facebook is not a website. It's a better technology. It's like Parler is an app. Uh-huh. Yeah. But Facebook is an infrastructure.
Right.
And so when we talk about, you know, we just need an alternative, like you guys are doing the Fight Laugh Feast, right?
Right.
Wait, we just need an alternative media platform. Well, no, because Amazon is going to cut you off from being able to do data storage.
Right.
Vimeo is going to cancel your back end.
Right. YouTube's going to cancel your videos.
Yeah, whatever your internet service is just going to cut you off, right? So yeah, GoDaddy's going to, and this is the problem that Gab has had. Which really makes me paranoid about Parler because I don't know how Parler can get away with it, but Gab couldn't, right?
Right.
And so Gab tried to do Parler,
right?
And iTunes cut them off.
Yeah.
Android cut them off.
Right.
Their banking cut them off. Their web host cut them off. Oh, everybody cut them off. So those guys went and developed. They're developing a whole new infrastructure.
They're developing their own server.
Yeah, and you don't hear about them a lot, but I have a feeling that. Those guys they can brace the storm now.
Yeah.
They can do whatever they want. And and now if you look at their stuff, just if you look at the Gab app versus the Parler app, the Gab app is way better. The fact that people aren't on there is crazy.
Can you still get on your iPhone?
You can get it. You can go to their website and download it manually. You can't get it through the store.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
So when you talk about that, the thing I keep on thinking of, why aren't Christians, why aren't we thinking that far ahead? I wanted to say this when you were talking about Facebook being infrastructure. I don't think people see what's coming next, but this is it. If you need to read the book what's his name? The book on Google, The Failure of Google. We had him on the show. I'll think of his name later. But anyway.
I know you're talking about.
I'll bring him up.
But cryptocurrency is not out here just floating around with no future.
Right.
And so... if you're paying attention, all these platforms.
George Gilder.
George Whew. Gilder.
There yes, we go.
Get everything by George Gilder.
Yeah.
Seriously. But especially the one he wrote on Google. But one of the things that cryptocurrency is about to do is, with currency being in flux right now and Google having the platform that they have, you won't, and Amazon, you won't just be logging on there for your accounts to your what you're doing. You'll be paying with Facebook dollars.
Right. You're banking.
They'll be their own currency.
Right.
They'll be your own bank. And so there are, this is already starting to happen. If you go, people in America are so stuck in America. If you go and use other Chinese apps, you come in, they treat you like a casino. You cash in your money,
yeah.
You get your currency that they have. That person goes and spends the currency yeah. that you when you watch their videos.
I actually think Christians are really good at building infrastructure, but only in terms of missionary organizations. Right. Missionary organization, the IMB, NAMB.
Well, hold on. They're not really that good at even that, though. Look how much money they're losing there.
Well, right. But
initially.
But yeah. So I think
the concept.
Well, here's an example that works, right? End Abortion Now.
Yeah.
That's an infrastructure mm-hmm. build, right? Like that's, we got 500 churches all over the country or more now, and we're training them, we're equipping them. And then one day we're going to send the bat signal. And all these churches are going to be,
this is what drives
you know,
me nuts.
Doing political action,
can't
right?
Can't disagree with you there a little bit.
Go ahead, okay. Yeah, sure.
Because while I agree with you, like that, they can build some sort of infrastructure, but they can't build it unless it's built around the idea of either evangelism.
That's what I'm
or
saying.
Abortion.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so you're
yeah,
you're
no,
going
that's
there.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, they can't build
like,
around
like,
anything else.
Like, but if you were to say, hey. Take the money that you're putting in abortion ministry or take the money that you're putting into missions or the cooperative program, for example,
right? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And say, let's build businesses. Let's build tech companies. Let's build
something beyond our social
media
platform.
What if we created a nonprofit or just created an organization that just gathered some of the brightest tech guys within Christianity and got them together and said, just build something.
Our own General Magic.
Yeah, let's make our own General Magic, right? Like, let's think of missions in terms of that, right? Like what?
Well, and you know why it's important is because I don't think everybody's hearing you and they think that you've separated the abortion ministry from what you're just saying.
Right.
They think you. And
that's
this is
what I'm saying. Right. Exactly.
But actually, what does Facebook, think about this. What does Facebook get to push since they have everybody there? Whatever they want.
Right. And
they get
to
push
delete.
Pro-life.
Yep.
They get to make sure that none of the people who are pro, you know, they get to put pro-choice.
Yeah.
If you're
or
pro-life, they get to push it back.
Right.
Hydroxychloroquine.
That's right.
They get to actually get bought out by Russian bots, even though they know they're Russian bots. And
right.
They say, sure, we'll let you. They get to push whatever message they want. And so they are thinking far more worldview.
Right. So a lot of this failure, I think, has to do with like this dispensational view, which says, we just need to preach the gospel, but the gospel doesn't apply to building tech companies.
Material.
Right. It doesn't. Material possessions. All that's going to just burn up.
That's just two
yeah.
kingdoms.
So we can't. Yeah. Two kingdoms. Sorry. Yeah. Two kingdom. And then, you know, like there's this divide
yeah.
as opposed to saying like, what if Mark Zuckerberg was a solid
Calvinist
Moscow, Idaho Christian, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
oh,
that
yeah.
would Musk.
That would be insane.
Which yeah. is why I want to get my hands on Kanye yeah. West.
And so yeah. you know, this goes back to the documentary. One of the, it was kind of like a minor detail in the film, but it was the most powerful one for me. And one of the women that's in the film, I think
yeah.
her name is Megan White. I don't know if that's entirely true, but Megan White. Well, just I think her name was Megan, right?
Let's call her Billy.
But she might not identify.
Yeah, she might not identify. Megan. So Megan. Remember, Megan got to work with all these people.
Yeah.
They built Android, built Twitter,
heads
built
of
iPhone,
Google.
Heads of Google, right? They're the vice president of technology at Apple, all these people, right? And she got to work with all these people. Obama calls her up.
Whoa.
Hey, I want you to be the chief of technology for the United States.
Wow.
Now think about, oh, bro, hit that. Please hit that.
No, this is important because the liberals saw that whatever happened at General Magic, everybody, the entire world communicates because of what happened there. The way the entire world, the way the world doesn't yet communicate started there, right? Even third world countries. And Obama said, you got all them on your Rolodex.
Yep.
Why don't you come work for me?
Right.
That's your link.
And if he wasn't even thinking about
and
that.
And I didn't mention this. She also started a homosexual coming out website. So she did that, and then she went
look
to go work for Obama.
Look how powerful they are.
Right.
The minority is the most minority among us is one of the most powerful people in our nation.
Right. Right. So my example and my encouragement is, you know, it's easy to think of it's easy to think of like big projects using the infrastructure that we already have. So I like to say, well, if we want to help missions, what would help missions? Let's develop teleportation, right? Like let's do that. Like, let's think in those terms. If God has made
go
it
to
possible,
Mars.
Let's go. Right, well, Elon, right?
That's right.
Like, Elon's absolutely thinking in the same way. He's like, well, if this world's going to just destroy itself, let's build another world, you know? And so
there's two things. So Marcus, we were sitting there watching together, and when you said that, I couldn't help but think the political implications that that had for the next 40 years.
Yes.
Right. And then the two things that I walked away with, one of them was hard work. I think we forget these guys, they showed them bunking up, and there was like, 15, 20 of them there that were working, 15, 20 people bunking up, not leaving work, working extremely hard to develop this tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking like, you know what? We have gotten lazy.
Yeah,
we've gotten lazy and we don't sweat anymore. And I think we've forgotten that it's the sweat of our brow that waters the garden that we're trying to create something out of.
Right, right. That's right.
And if we don't sweat, we don't get any water to that garden. We don't get that thing to grow.
Right.
And so I was really impressed with their hard work. The second thing was, and I told you about this, and I'm going to keep repeating this because I think people need to hear it. If somebody walked up to me or you and they said, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you one in every five people is going to have a device that you're going to make. Mm. But you're going to have to suffer hell for the next 17 to 20 years. You're going to have failures over failures. You will not have many successes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in 15 to 20 years, one in every five is going to have a device that you created.
Right.
Would you take the deal?
I would take the deal.
Absolutely. Because the impact of your suffering, you can see the value of it.
Yeah. But we live in a society today that says if you don't wear a mask, you're going to die.
Right.
And right. And so it's like you can't even take that. You can't take the risk to go to the grocery store without a mask.
Right.
You're not going to build... You're not going to build the world.
But the problem that I think that we run into, especially now as Christians and the world and the mindset that we have just as people in America, we don't know we're 5 years into a 17-year hump.
Right.
And no one is there making that deal with us.
Right.
No one's saying, hey, man, Gabe, guess what? You man, you only got 10 more years left. Mm-hmm. We don't see the end of this.
Right.
We don't have any of that vision. But we're all in that story, especially right. When you say, okay, I know you have the vision of what you need to do. And I can't, with Christians, if anybody should understand that, that is our narrative, that our Savior did that exact thing.
Right.
Right.
Like, that is our story.
Well, and this, if it's not, this needs to be clear. Everyone needs to be able to see this, and we don't. But I think the biggest issue with the church is that we want to play it safe.
Right.
That's the ultimate problem here. We want to play it safe. No risk. So that affects how we invent or don't invent. That affects how we live out our faith before God. That affects how our cultural engagement. And of course, to this, that affects how we think about infrastructure and building platforms that take over the world.
Right.
So if we don't take risk, we're scared to take
risks. Well, I think part of it might be, you know, we need to have a really strong biblical view of inheritance. Like, what am I going to pass down to my kids? When we think about that, it's just like, well, I'm going to leave them a house and some cash
that's
in the
good.
Bank.
That's
yeah,
good,
sure.
But Marcus, it's certainly. Like, you don't want to leave them a house and a cash in the bank. You want to leave them a business and an infrastructure.
An iPhone.
Yeah. Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So that's a much bigger, like I have a much bigger vision. Like the founders of this country, they're like, well, my vision is I'm going to put my family on a boat. Some of them are going to die. Then we're going to get here. Some of them are going to freeze.
Yeah.
But some might live, and they're going to have
an
entire
have
nation,
the US.
And they're going to be free.
What's crazy is you
brought
this
up. But don't go to the grocery store without a mask on.
That's right. Right.
Well, no way.
You brought this up earlier where you said, you know, Christians have invented so much. There's been so many Christians who have invented, you know, I mean, Christian scientists. You got Galileo who, you know, claimed the world was round in the middle of everyone thinking it was flat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have Thomas Edison was a confessing Christian at some level. The Morse code. I mean, you have Christians that have invented a lot.
Yeah, I actually have a theory that the greatest technological inventions of all time originate from a Christian.
Yeah,
the ability to create those sort of things. Are blessings that a regenerated person gets.
That's right.
And I think history looks back and you see that and you go, Whoa. So if you're a Christian, or the pagans, they're only going to build on top of what the Christians have done. Right. So, you know, like the iPhone and stuff, the iPhone, Android, they're just building on top of Samuel Morris's tech.
That's right.
Because Samuel, I mean, I think it was Gary North that said when the Morse code, the very first time that Morse code message was sent, 24 hours earlier, the speed of communication was as fast as your horse.
Ooh.
And then it went to the speed of light.
Right.
And he said, never in the history of the world has a technological advance happened that quickly.
That's right.
And iPhone hasn't, they haven't increased the speed of communication.
No, they haven't.
None of them have increased the speed of communication. It's still as fast as Morse code.
Right.
Right. They're building, like, you know, fiber and stuff like that. But it's
internet.
Still,
it's just yeah, different
it's
housing.
Just, it's just different housing, but it's still the same digital dits and dashes that Morse code was. Yeah. That's all it was.
Yeah. Interesting.
Man.
So.
I think this just needs to, you know, put a burn our saddle. To get off, take risks, you know, start companies, yes. You know, create some failures, create yes. Some success, you know, and really think. I mean, I think the thing that, you know, hearing you guys talk about this documentary, the big thing that it motivates me to do is to think a lot bigger about,
that's
okay,
right.
You know, God's given us, you know, for us, and talking about my business, my future of trying to make income and so forth, you know, God's given us Cross Politic. He's given us the Fight Net, mm-hmm. for Life Feast Network. He's given us our conference. He's given us a number of things. And I need to think, you know, how can I do what Steve Jobs did with the iPhone? Or how can I do what, you know, what General Magic did with inventing something that the market had no clue of even how to process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But knowing that that kind of product or that kind of technology was going to be a means of taking over the whole world. And we've said this before on our podcast, you know, God's given us, you know, the Gutenberg Press put the Bible all over the world. Well, you know, podcasting is really Gutenberg 2.0, because I can sit here in Moscow, Idaho, and bring the gospel to Australia or New Zealand or Indonesia, in which we have listeners from all over the world.
Right.
And it's at this point, it's, you know, we aren't being canceled off podcasts yet, you know, and at this point we aren't being deplatformed and all that stuff. It's going to happen. So how can we build what we're doing in such a way where we own the platform and it's far more valuable than podcasting ever could imagine?
Right.
You know,
the amen, what you're saying, and to take something from Marcus, Marcus said, you know, Knox, what do you think Christian investors are doing with their money?
Right.
Boy, when you ask that,
investing in a PureFlix,
you know, and that's you know,
but no, but see, the thing is, like, that PureFlix is an easy investment. Like, that's right. That's an easy investment. I think Christian investors look for easy investments.
That's exactly right.
And Nashville has created a Christian art, a Christian culture. That's an easy investment, and they've worked really hard to regulate that industry. So it's always that, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, I can make a film that looks like a soap opera, but it's going to make a lot of money.
Right.
And that's expected, and that's what it is.
Right.
So the risk would be for an investor to see what's happening here at Fight Laugh Feast and go, man, those people, man, I could put all my money into them and they could get completely canceled.
Yeah.
Like, that's the risk, but is it worth it? Right. Like, is it worth it that you're going to put money into stuff?
Or why wouldn't you say, like, what could they make if they did get canceled?
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
That's exactly right. Well, look at Babylon Bee, right?
Right. Yeah.
Babylon Bee, 100,000 new Twitter followers because they got canceled for 45 minutes.
Well, here's no one really knows the history of Moscow. So if you guys know what Pastor Wilson was doing back in the 90s, we brought some of this up, right? Yeah. You know, Pastor Wilson started Logos because he wanted a Christian education experience for his children. And then he started the college because his daughter, Becca, was graduating high school, right?
Yeah.
And then Doug used to get invited to Ligonier conferences to speak. Yeah. I mean, Doug used to get platformed by major conferences and so forth.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, cancel.
Oh, right. But love, you skip one. His books.
I'm getting to the books yet.
All right.
And so Doug starts getting canceled from Christians. We were getting canceled from Christians long before the world was canceling us. It's unbelievable. And then so Doug starts his blog. Okay, mm-hmm. He's like, okay, I'm gonna get canceled from conferences. No big deal. I don't need the praises of men. And so he starts his blog. And this is, you know, right when blogging was starting to get going. And then Doug used to get published by Thomas Nelson.
Right.
And then cancel. So it's like, well, let's put more money in Canon Press.
Right.
And it wasn't like he wasn't selling. No, wasn't it wasn't selling.
He was making them money.
Right, right. Exactly.
And so, you know, Doug gets canceled. So let's put more money into Canon Press. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we started, this is one of the reasons why we actually got into podcasting in 2016 is because I actually went to other platforms to try to get our show.
Same thing.
Same thing. I went to radio stations, so forth. And
me too.
And yeah. Cancel.
Absolutely. I mean,
you know, no opportunity there. So right. I was like, well, you know, I can start my own podcast. I can create my own website. I can get the word out.
And that's created infrastructure. That's important to mention because that's created an infrastructure where Christian media operates opposite of the rest of the world. So like if I make a film, I would expect people to pay me for the rights to play that film.
Right.
Right. But in Christianity, it's the other way around where you pay TBN, you pay the Christian networks for airtime.
That's right.
Well, that's not how it works in any other world.
But the reason it doesn't work like that is because nothing is worth paying for.
Christians don't make enough media or TV shows.
True.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
So they don't have a product that they know they can make money off of.
Right.
Yeah. And so if I don't have a product I know I can make money off of, what I'm going to try and do is accumulate enough product that at least I get the accumulation of it, I can go and sell stuff to sponsors.
Right.
Right. And if I have something that's hot, then I'll pay whatever because I can turn profitable. And that's another thing. We don't think about saying, how can I make something how can I make something that my neighbor will love, be of value to them, that they can turn profit off of?
Right.
Yeah. We don't think about other people's profit in a lot of this. Like, man, I can make this person a lot of money. No one says that.
Right.
You know, but we can. If you think about it like that, it's like, man, with a TV network, we can keep people engaged and watching our show long enough that they'll stay around 30 seconds for a commercial.
Yeah, right.
And so part of the skill in this is, man, the full education is, but getting hot.
Right.
You got to get hot. You got to get your skills to
make good stuff.
You got to make good stuff.
Right.
For other Bible, somebody else to turn profit off of it.
That's right.
That's right.
So.
No, I think all that is good. But we've just had this mentality of, you know, for the longest time, it was. Well, not a lot of people watch Christian content, so it's never going to be that good. And then, so you're not going to make a lot of money, and then you have to make another thing, and it's not going to be that good. So it's just a circle. It's just circular
but
cycle.
But that's not how God's world works.
No, it's not how God's world works, and it's not how the secular world works. Like some of the most profitable movies in the secular world, like Blair Witch Project, only cost $100,000. It's made millions, right? That's one of the most profitable movies of all time. And then in addition, you have... You know, the Christian films have made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They've made a lot of profit. Passion of the Christ, $600 million in the box office, right? Wow. Cost $30 million to make. God's Not Dead, $60 million in the box office. Cost $3 million to make, right? So they're incredibly profitable. But the thing is that there's not a desire to really push that envelope and say, well, what's next? Because it's working for them.
Well, and we're just now realizing, I guess we can make good movies.
Right. Well, I mean, like, look, you're Seriously. Showing me. So, you know, I built Apologia a few years before you guys got CrossPolitik off the ground. And so the tech that we invested in is completely different than the tech that you guys invested in.
Yeah,
and I'm in here and I'm looking at the tech that you guys got, and it is far cheaper than what we paid at Apologia.
Right.
And that's not because we were...
You guys were ahead.
We were ahead of the game, and the market hadn't created the stuff that it's created, you know, in the past 5 years that we're still using.
Right.
And like, I mean, just the way I was just looking at what you're doing, I'm like, well, that's way better and cheaper than what we got there. Right. You know what I mean? Right. And then everything is way better and cheaper. It's just that.
And that's how it keeps going. It's just funny because we were just talking about this. One of the switchers that we have.
That's
They just came out with the third wave.
So it was $300 for the first one.
$300 for the first
one. And then a few months later.
They came out with one for $600.
And now they came out with another one.
It's $900.
It's the same thing. And they had that tech all along because Apologia has it in their studio.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
you know what I mean? And we paid a lot more for it because it just didn't exist in that form at the time.
And they rolled it out, though, in those pieces.
Yeah.
And they just added a little something next time because, truthfully, if we would have got the third one right away, I don't know if we're going to jump into $1,000. I don't know. It's a big commitment, $1,000.
They had us at $300. That was easy.
Okay, right.
We did it. We're putting that on the credit card.
And, you know, this is why one thing to say, too, right now with the way things are and where we're at, because of the price of everything, the investment to get the outcome that we want and turn on profit is more, is a lot cheaper than what it used to be.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, I wish, when we were talking about this, I wish somebody would have found us 7-8 years ago and said, what do you, how much can I give you?
Right. Because, well, see, that's the thing. Like, cause I remember, cause I, for those that don't know, like I stayed in David's basement
for
2 years and we started making content.
Crown
and,
rights.
And this was at a time where people didn't make content. There's no money in YouTube.
Right.
Like, I mean, we were just making stuff to show people what we could do and just hoping somebody would just be like, hey, I'll hire you.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's eventually what happened. That's what happened, right? Like, yeah. So we did. It worked. That time was well invested. But I still go back and look at that stuff and I go, we still make money from that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we were really early on that stuff and there's a lot of marketing and so the thing is, you know, as Doug says, raking rocks, right? Cross politic, fight laugh fees, raking rocks. This is what we got. The tech is real cheap right now. We can actually produce this stuff. Yep. And then the real value is in the talent, yep. Right? That's where the investors need to see we need to invest in the talent because you can only make as much stuff as you have time and labor for, right? The technology is nothing now, man. Like that's like you say, you just throw that on a credit card,
right?
Right? I mean, that's real simple.
When I sit down and I look at our network, I wish I had $20 million. I mean, just look at the people on. Can I just start with Mark Dewey, who's on the network?
Right.
I mean, we've got a baseball podcast on the network.
It's right. Phenomenal.
And he
phenomenal.
Is. Phenomenal.
You put him up with the best podcast.
Absolutely.
Best announcers.
This last podcast he had talking about being able to fight and if we should still
brawling on the baseball field. Is it okay? Is it yes or no?
Yeah.
Thumbs up or thumbs down.
It's such a man's podcast. And we're missing, there's a lot of other things we're missing. You got How to Build a Temp has been just a beast. And he's been plodding through. Yeah. And he wasn't liked when he first started because a lot of Christians couldn't figure out why in the world they needed business podcast.
Right.
And then Matt has proved why you need.
That's right.
You got AD Robus out there. I mean, he's killing it.
Yeah.
Not to put money behind these guys who are out there. AD Robles is helping create a dam so that the social justice movement doesn't plow right over you.
Right.
And
right.
why he doesn't have more people. I mean, this is just, it's mind-boggling to me. You know, and so we have, Theology Podcast. Come on.
Right.
Why? I mean,
Those guys are fantastic.
You know, Law and Prophets, you know, I mean, and these guys have been doing this hustling, trying to get people to sign up for the club membership so that we can continue to pay them to do what they're doing.
Right.
But everything is already set in place.
Right. Everything. Know? Yeah. The infrastructure's getting developed every day.
It's got some duct tape.
It's got some duct tape. And I don't mind that. But what happens is that, and this is something, and this is not a slam. I really appreciate what Abortion Ministries, Apologia, what they're doing with the abortion ministry. Man, we need that out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're running that play excellent.
Yeah.
They got that play down.
Right.
The only way that sometimes it seems like that we can get people over here is if we do something that says abortion evangelism, street ministry.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
A harder plod because you can't get people to understand, like, look, what Apology is doing is going to need some political help on the
other
side.
That's right. And they're going to need some business help.
They're going to need a world for the infrastructure they're creating over there. You know, and then we need somebody else on the other bend to cover the other flank.
Right.
And so Christians don't
think that way. We need VCs.
That's
we need
right.
venture capitalists.
That's right.
We need people with stock funds and all these things.
Yeah.
Like we need people. You know, I've been talking to some VCs recently, and it's just amazing to me how they're in a position. Right. I mean, this is something that Christians, we need to create more Christians in this position where they write checks for $1 million. They write checks for $2 million. They write checks for that. Yeah. And they expect to lose money.
Yeah. Because
like that's just normal for them.
They understand.
It's like, look, I like what you're doing. I think it's great. Here's a check. They expect that money to be low. They have hope that it is. But all at the same time, they're not gambling.
Yeah.
Like they don't make stupid decisions.
It's investments.
Like they lose, you know, a certain percentage of their companies are going to fail.
Yeah,
they just expect it. But the ones that succeed are going to give their money to invest in even more. And when I look around the Christian world and I go, "Well, where are the VCs that are just Shark tanking every day?"
Yeah.
You know, that who are the guys? Who are the Christian guys that are just reading 40 pitches a day?
They're not playing it safe.
Right.
And I think, and this is kind of what David Bonson was talking about, this, we kind of have this feedback loop between, is it the leaders who are screwing us up, or is it people who get the leaders that deserve? Yeah, right. We need good people who create new leaders that create good people.
That's right.
And I think part of the problems with Christian investors is when they look around, and venture capitalists, they look around, it's like, where do they look for the new ideas?
Well, they're going where the money is, right?
Right.
And the money is going into Silicon Valley. Well, that's where all the liberals are.
Yeah, but but again, where do you look at? Yeah, and we gave that up, right?
That's right. We gave that up.
But where do you look at for Christians who can make you money? You know what I'm saying? Like, the only place.
Because, like, Kanye tweeted the other day. Kanye said, hey, I'm at $5 billion. Anybody know a Christian CFO?
Yeah. And you said David Bonson.
I said David Bonson. Yeah. That's the first guy that pops into my head. Probably, I mean, man, if they could get connected, everybody tweet David Bonson and Kanye together.
Seriously.
But we need to have this loop where it's like, no, these guys are thinking about, they might not have it yet. They might not be there. But what happens if I give them $3 million and they get us to the next place for the next step that makes me $400 million?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's exactly right.
But it takes, we have to start thinking that way to get those VCs there. To come over here.
Right. And it's like, you know, it's like, well, what if for the VCs, it's like, well, man, like, you know, cross politics, they talk a lot about stuff that, for example, you start a business or a company and then your board overtakes you and then becomes a liberal board and you get booted.
You hand it over.
But it's like, yeah, but they usually give you a nice exit package and you can work on something else.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they don't just boot you and you're gone with nothing. Like, they leave you with stock.
But I'll just say, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Just Christians for far too long have grown their companies and sold it to liberals. I've seen
that's
it again.
That's exactly
and
right.
Again.
I didn't say sell it to liberals. Yeah.
But I've
I
seen that happen
booted.
Way
yeah.
too many times.
That's right.
So, yeah.
No, absolutely. So, but anyways, I think that's been a great discussion.
Nah, man.
So,
there's a lot here.
So, I'm ready to
talking
do some
about
work.
Infrastructure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, anyway, thanks everybody for watching. Thank you for tuning in to Fight Laugh Feast. Be sure to go to the Fight Laugh Feast Conference October 1st. I'll be there. All the Fight Laugh Feast people will be there. Mark Dewey, the baseball guy.
I just want to plug real quick. When you guys join up for the club membership, make sure you sign up for Law and Profits, okay? Because when you guys sign up for a particular a show within our network, specific funding goes to that show. So make sure you guys support Law and Profits.
That's right.